no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Saturday morning, you're watching, you're chatting, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. We're pleased to welcome to the program, for the perspective from Edmonton, Derek Van Diest of Post Media. Derek, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Good morning, guys. Good. I'm doing well. Thank you.
That's great, Derek. Obviously, pleased to have you join us on this Saturday morning. As you might imagine, we're talking about the Jets and the Oilers, as I'm sure everybody is in Edmonton as well. You know, Derek, you look at the series so far, and if you would, you know, the storyline is clearly the Jets' ability so far to neutralize McDavid and Draisaitl as much as they've been able to do so, keeping them both off of the scoreboard. Heading into game three, where this is obviously, if it's 3-0, more often than not, you can write off the series at that point in time. What do the Oilers need to do different in order to get McDavid and Draisaitl going? Is there anything in particular, or is it just a function of them continuing to play like they are, and eventually the chances are going to get in the net, like we've seen so much from the two best point getters and goal scorers in the NHL?
Well, reality says that you can only hold those two down for so long. You don't score 105 points in 56 games and kind of not know how to score, not know how to find a way to generate offense. And I think what happened last night is that Dave Tippett has that trump card to play them together. And I know he likes to hold on to it. He likes to hold on to it and then kind of use it in emergency situations. He used it in the third period of game one. And then he decided to use it in game two, and it didn't work out. And he really had nothing to go to after that. And I think that's the issue when you play them together and you have them shut down. I thought that first line of the Jets did a fantastic job against both of them, because they didn't generate much offense. And as Paul Maurice said yesterday, there are sacrifices to trying to shut down McDavid and Draisaitl, and those sacrifices come in the form of offense. And the Jets right now are willing to give up offense from their top lines, because they know that they have a pretty balanced lineup. You don't lose much from this Jets second line to the third line, in my opinion. They have probably the best, most even three lines in hockey that they can just roll and roll and roll, and eventually they'll get something out of it. And I think that's what you're seeing right now with the Winnipeg Jets. They're focusing all their attention on shutting these two guys down. And if the Oilers are going to beat the Jets, they want someone else other than Draisaitl and McDavid to beat them. And I think right now the Oilers aren't getting any depth scoring. And that's been an issue all year, is that they don't have much in the way of second, third, and fourth line. And you look at even Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who's supposed to be kind of pushing that second line, that second unit. He hadn't scored a lot 5-on-5 this year, and he's really struggling in this series to generate much. And I think the Jets, the game plan they had 9 games to try and figure out, okay, what are we going to do to stop these guys? They had a lot of film on the Oilers. They had a lot of film to watch and say, okay, what is the best course of action? How are we going to do these guys? Obviously, going back and forth and trading chances with these guys isn't going to work out. And they've come up with a game plan, and it's been a perfect game plan right now. They're really sacrificing offense for defense. They're keeping a lot of guys behind the puck. Their defense, they're not pinching in. They're not holding the line. They're keeping everything back. They're putting a lot of guys collapsing in front of the net. And they're letting Connor Hellebuyck make the first save and clearing rebounds. Like, you look at Connor Hellebuyck, he doesn't have a lot of second or third opportunities that he has to make a save. I think there was one or two last night. He made a great save on Puljujärvi on a rebound on the power play after making a great save on Draisaitl. But outside of that, I think the Jets defense are doing a great job of clearing the front of the net. And also, I think last night they did a great job of not letting the Oilers gain the zone. Like, the Oilers don't like to throw the puck in the zone and go and retrieve it, which you have to do sometimes in playoff hockey. They like to carry the puck in. They have guys that can carry the puck in. But I thought the Jets did a great job of holding the line, and they had great sticks last night. And there was a couple of occasions where McDavid was coming at them with speed, and they held the line, and they made McDavid make a move at the line, and they were able to get sticks on pucks and things like that. So whatever game plan Paul Maurice and his staff put together is working to a T right now. And also, they're getting fantastic goaltending from Connor Hellebuyck, which you knew that was coming. You knew the Connor Hellebuyck that the Oilers faced in the regular season wasn't the Connor Hellebuyck that is in real life. He's back to the Vezina Trophy winning form. And when you have one of the best goaltenders in the world, you're never out of a series. And I think the Oilers have to be very, very concerned going into Winnipeg. Now, you look at worst case scenario for the Oilers. They want to at least get a split in Winnipeg and come home 3-1. If they lose game three at 3-0, no teams don't come back from 3-0. They know it's pretty much over after that. Teams can come back from 3-1, but now the Oilers are looking. They're desperately looking to get a split out of their worst case scenario, because obviously anything less than that, the series is over.
Derek, right before you hopped on, we were talking about Jesse Puljujarvi, and I kind of made the point, and it seemed like, you know, Drew and Dave were agreeing. You know, he's arguably been the Oilers' best forward, and obviously, you know, that has a lot to do with, you know, the goal that he scored. But, you know, just what have you seen from Puljujarvi? Because this is obviously a guy who had a, you know, pretty solid regular season. I mean, there were some stretches where maybe he wasn't producing, but I believe he had 15 goals and, you know, comes back to the Oilers after spending some time in Finland. Just so what have you seen from Puljujarvi, and is it, you know, Captain Obvious speaking that, you know, they're going to need him to continue to be good, because it seems like they just aren't getting, you know, that many offensive contributions. The bottom six just isn't producing as much offense as I think head coach Dave Tippett would like.
Well, the funny story with Puljujarvi, this is the situation with Puljujarvi going back to his draft year in 2006. The Oilers thought he was for sure going to go top three, and the Oilers had the number four pick in the draft that year. So they thought for sure, there's no way we're going to get Puljujarvi. We're not even going to bother interviewing him. We're not even going to bother talking to him. We're not going to bother with Puljujarvi. Let's focus on whoever we're going to think has dropped the four. And when Columbus passed on him, when the Finnish GM and the Finnish head scout passed on the Finnish star, to me, that was a red flag. There's something going on with this guy. If the two guys in the league that can actually talk to him in his language decided to pass on him after interviewing him, there's something wrong. But the Oilers fell over themselves thinking Columbus had made a mistake, fell over themselves trying to get the Puljujarvi. Now, what happens with Puljujarvi, he's an incredibly talented young man. He's an incredibly talented player. But coming into the league, he's one of those guys that his talent, his size, his speed, and his ability always trumped everything else. He didn't have to worry about systems. He didn't have to worry about where he needed to be on the back check. He didn't have to worry about where he needed to be offensively. And then the owners kind of, they knew he had a talent, but they tried to rush him into the league. And they rushed him into the league, and then they said to him, okay, in this situation, you have to be here. In this situation, you have to be here. In this situation, you have to be. And totally confused the young man. He'd never been a player that is a situational player. He was a little bit like Taylor Hall that way. I just give me the puck, let me go, and I go play, and that's how I do my thing. And so they confused him so much early on. Then they said, okay, go to the American Hockey League and we'll show you, you know, you're the F1, F2, F3. When you start throwing terms like that, Puljujarvi is a great kid, but he's not the brightest kid. Like, he's just a hockey player. Like, he's not out there thinking where he needs to be, what he has to do, where he has to go. And it became such a frustration because he was, if you watched him play when he was first here, he had no idea where to go on the ice, offensively and defensively. That's how much this coaching staff had screwed him up, because they kept trying to drill this home, and saying, this is where you got to go. This is what you got to be. If you're the first guy in the zone, you got to go here. If you're the second guy in the zone, you got to go here. And that just confused him. And he really frustrated. And after a while, he said, I'm done. I can't play here. I'm going back home, where they just let me open the gate and let me play and let me do my thing. Now, coming back, I think the Oilers recognize this and the coaching staff recognize this, and they said, we have to simplify Puljujarvi. We have to simplify it. We'll play him with McDavid. We'll tell him, give McDavid the puck, go to the front of the net. That's what he does offensively. Gives McDavid the puck, goes to the front of the net. He goes and uses that big body. He'll fish pucks out of the corner, and you watch him. He'll fish pucks out of the corner, and the first thing he does, where's Connor McDavid? I'm giving Connor McDavid the puck. And that's what they told him to do. And they said, go to the net, kid, find yourself some space in the ice, and Connor McDavid will find you. And he's finding success in that regard. And then when it comes to his own zone, he says, when you get back in your own zone, just go to the front of the net. And when you're at the front of the net, if someone else is standing beside you, then go cover your wing. They'll tell you where to go. And you see how they simplified the game for him. And now he's just playing. He doesn't have to think about what he has to do or where he has to go. And he's got a great shot that he's got – pretty good offensive instincts. But when you're playing with Connor McDavid, you say to him, just give him the puck, and which is what I would do if I was playing with Connor McDavid. Give him the puck, go to the front of the net, find a spot. And he's got a great shot, and that's how he's been successful. And the Oilers have found that formula with Jesse Puljujarvi. They're not trying to confuse him with, you know, you go into coaches' rooms sometimes, and you go into even minor hockey rooms, and you watch the coaches, and they go, oh, okay, F1 goes here, F2 goes here. And then the kids are just completely confused. And I think that was a situation with Puljujarvi. It's just, there's too much information, coach. Just let me go out there and play my game. And that's what they're doing. give the puck to McDavid, find open space, and shoot the puck. And I think that's why he's having success. Just go to the net, stick on the ice, and you'll get some goals. And I think good on the Oilers for recognizing that, sometimes you really have to simplify games for players. You can't fit a round peg in a square hole, as they say. You have to simplify. You have to look at the player, and then you have to kind of put the game plan around him. And at first, McDavid didn't want to play with him because Puljujärvi didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to go. McDavid would have the puck, and Puljujärvi would be nowhere around. And then he was so concerned about his defensive responsibilities. Lots of times he'd be halfway back playing defense when the Oilers were in the offensive zone because they thought they were going to lose the puck. So that's what's going on with Puljujärvi now. Also, it's funny because he came here. He lived here for 3 years, didn't speak a word English. He goes back to Finland to learn English, which is the funny part. So he comes back, and now he knows how to speak English, which is hilarious. 2 years in Finland, he learned how to speak English. And so he comes back. Now he can communicate with his team. He can be more his personality is showing, and guys can communicate with him. Like when he was first here, he was a loner, never went anywhere with the team, never went out with the guys. And I think that one of the funniest things was when Connor McDavid turned 21, it happened that they turned 21 in Las Vegas, and they had a day off day. I don't know if the league planned it that way, if the Oilers planned it that way. Anyway, they had a huge party for Connor McDavid in Las Vegas to turn 21. They rented out a casino or a ballroom, and they had half the team there. The only guy that wasn't at that party was Puljujärvi because he was 20, and he couldn't go. He was too young. So on the flight back, there was like one guy on the plane. It was Jesse Puljujärvi because he couldn't. And I think that's kind of the situation where he was kind of alienated from the rest of his team. But now the guys love him. His personality is coming out. He can communicate with the team. He's just matured a little bit. And he's a completely different player that they had when they drafted him early on. And I think that's really showing. And there's a lot of bright things. And you look at Puljujärvi now, and who would have thought? He'd have more goals than Lane. He'd have more goals than Dubois. Right now, you're looking at – he's looking like the best player out of that draft, when it was a pretty deep draft.
Derek Van Diest of Post Media is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're talking about the Oilers and the Jets. The Jets leading the series 2-0. Game 3 goes tomorrow night. Game 4 goes Monday night.
You know, Derek, we've talked about the Jets' depth throughout the course of this program. And, you know, you play game one without Pierre-Luc Dubois and Nikolaj Ehlers, and you get Dubois back. Ehlers is, doesn't play game two. There's a thought that he could play game three. What do the Oilers have in terms of their depth? If they needed to call on someone to come into this lineup to give them a little bit of a jump, do they have that player? Do they have someone who can kind of come in and kind of maybe kickstart things for them when, you know, so they're not solely reliable on Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl?
They have Tyler Ennis. That's basically the only guy I can think of that can come in and make an impact is Tyler Ennis, because Kyle Turris has been awful this year. You know, if they want to pull McLeod out of the lineup, the rookie out of the lineup, they could insert Kyle Turris, but he hasn't provided anything. Devin Shore is not a guy that's going to score for you. He's kind of a grinder, checker guy. He's a guy that could come in here. I think if the Oilers were struggling defensively, if they were giving up a lot of shots and a lot of chances, I think they would bring in Devin Shore because he's a pretty responsible player defensively. But outside of Tyler Ennis, who's not the same player that he was when he was in Buffalo, he's just kind of a shell of himself. He's a guy that has some speed that can kind of help generate some offense on your lower second and third and fourth lines. But that's it. They have one guy. And there's a reason Ryan McLeod's in the lineup as a rookie that's played a handful of games. They brought him up late in the season. They said, hey, let's see what he can do. Turns out he's got some pretty good speed. He's got some pretty good offensive instincts. Okay, you're starting game one of the playoffs. And I think that's an indication of how weak they are when it comes to their depth. They don't have much. That's it. And I think the only move that they can make is inserting Tyler Ennis into the lineup and hoping that somehow, some way, he finds a spark and he provides a spark and he helps the Oilers offensively, because they need some offense from their bottom lineup. And you guys were talking about James Neal. James Neal he doesn't have it anymore. And he's had such a tough year. He battled COVID. He got off to a late start. And as we know, as we get older, it's tougher to get back in shape as you get older. And I remember talking to veteran hockey players, and they would always say to me, you have to stay in shape because at our age, it's so tough to get back in shape. And I remember talking to a lot of guys in their late 30s and saying, that's the key, is trying to stay in shape. And then when you get sick and then you get out of that hockey shape, it takes you a long, long, long time to get back in that hot shape. And I think that's what we're seeing with James Neal right now. He's not the same player that he was before. And I think James Neal is still effective for the Oilers on the power play. But outside of that, he's not very effective. And it's funny because there's a formula in the playoffs where a lot of teams say the top two lines will cancel each other out. And it depends on what the third and fourth line bring you. Your third and fourth line have to outplay their third and fourth line. And that's what's going to get you in the next round of the series. The Oilers, it's opposite. They're hoping that third and fourth line just play even. And they can get McDavid and Draisaitl to outplay the first two lines of the Winnipeg Jets. And I knew this was going to be an issue for the Edmonton Oilers going into the series just because of the Jets' depth, and the Oilers don't have any. So the only guy I can see coming in for game three is Tyler Ennis. And then we'll see what happens, how the Oilers kind of split up the lineup, whether they try and balance it out. They have that option of playing McDavid at center, Draisaitl at center, and Nugent Hopkins at center, and then trying to fill the gaps around there to maybe try and even out the lines a little bit. And that's what they may have to do because they were obviously top heavy last night. It didn't work out. So they may have to try and spread the wealth a little bit and hope somehow they get some offense.
Derek Van Deest of Post Media is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Edmonton Oilers and the Winnipeg Jets, the Jets leading the series 2-0. You know, Derek, you talk about the depth and you look back at last night's game. I mean, Dominic Cahoon plays two shifts in the third period and then is on the ice for the game-winning goal in overtime. You mentioned McLeod also. I believe he had maybe one shift in the third period prior to being on the ice for the game-winning goal. Does Dave Tippett have faith in enough guys at the bottom of his roster moving forward, or is this just sort of, you know, continue the problem of the lack of depth that the Oilers have had all season long?
Well, I don't think he does have faith in the bottom of his roster, not offensively anyway. I think he's comfortable with them defensively, and I think they have played well defensively. I think they're not giving up a much, but when it comes down to it, he's going to go down. If he's going to go down, he's going to go down with his best guys, and I think he's going to throw those guys over the boards and say, these are the guys that got us here. These are the guys that are going to get us out of this mess. And you look at some of those ice times last night. They were crazy. Darnell Nurse played over 32 minutes on defense. Like, so you're looking at – he was on the ice. He was just all over the place. And I think Draisaitl was over 30 minutes. McDavid was high and all those guys. Like, there were some really, really high ice times out there. And eventually that's going to catch up to you, I think, as the series goes on, if you're playing those guys that many minutes. Because he just doesn't have the depth. And that was a situation going in with the Oilers. And they talked about it when Ken Holland took over the team. There are some really bad contracts here. There are some bad contracts that, you know, he couldn't get out of. And you look at a guy like Zach Kassian, who 3 years ago or 4 years ago in 2017 was a monster in the playoffs. And he was running around, hitting everybody. Everyone was intimidated of him. He was scoring goals. He was just a huge, huge part of that 2017 playoff run. And he was rewarded for it. He got a big contract for it because of they thought this guy is a playoff player. Through two games, we've barely even noticed him. And I think he's obviously been hurt. It's funny because they were always talking about Cassian's got to bring that physical play, that physical play to the Oilers lineup. He's their big physical guy. And early on, he wasn't doing that. And they basically sat him down and said, hey, why do you think you're here? You're here to hit guys. You're here to punish guys. You're here to get in fights. And Cassian said, okay, he got in a fight, broke his hand. He was out for a big portion of the year. Then they came back and said, listen, you got to be that physical force, Took a run at Shea Weber and he hurt his knee. So he was out for another bit. So he's never been able to get any traction. And now in the playoffs, you can tell that he's a little tentative. He wants to get that going, but sometimes it's not there for whatever reason. And the two times he tried it this year, he got hurt. So maybe there's a little trepidation in the back that he goes and runs a guy. And now you're in a situation where they're not calling a lot of penalties and power plays have become so huge. I think the Jets only have two penalties in one power play in the whole series. So you don't want to take a stupid penalty and give the Jets a chance on the power play, and especially when the games are so tight. So now, it's really tough. They need a guy like Zach Kassian to get going, to fire up, to get some energy, and he's just not getting it done right now. So the bottom half of that lineup is a problem. It's always going to be a problem because it's basically filled with million-dollar players. Ken Holland was like, I got $1 million. Who wants to come play with the Oilers? Okay, Jason House, here you go. You know, who else we got? Nygaard, here's $1 million. Come play with us. Tourist, we'll give you $1 million. Come play with us. Kind of throwing a lot of stuff against the wall, hoping something would stick, and nothing has on that bottom half of that lineup.
And, you know, just I was before I get to my question, like maybe Derek, you know, Cassian with those back to back 15 goals is trying to tell Dave Tippett, no, I'm a sniper. I'm not a physical player. But, you know, just moving away from the forwards and going to the defense, you know, obviously, you know, you mentioned Nurse played, you know, over 30 minutes and Nurse is. He, I don't know if he ends up being a Norris finalist, but he's definitely in that conversation. He had that type of year, both offensively and defensively. Drew talked about it a few weeks back. Like he's been sensational this year for the Oilers. We don't have to tell you that, but like going into game three, I mean, and I think Nurse had five or six shots, and I don't know how many Barry had, but he probably had, you know, close to that as well. And you mentioned the power play, and obviously, you know, Nurse and Barry are guys that are going to have an impact on the power play if they get those opportunities. But is that something you're also expecting here in game three, considering that, you know, McDavid and Dreisaitl have been kept off the score sheet? Are you expecting the Oilers to try, like, and maybe that's something that, you know, isn't different than, you know, they normally try to do, but maybe even more so considering game three is a must win, that they're going to continue to activate specifically Nurse and Barry and, you know, try to get those guys going in terms of, you know, getting some goals here because like we talked about, you know, you're just not getting goals from anybody right now in the lineup except for Puljujärvi.
Yeah, no, they do. And those guys have been very active offensively. And Barry's an offensive guy. He doesn't give you much defensively. You're really going to – like, he struggles in his own end sometimes. So it's really tough. And we talked about that a little bit with Dave Tippett and Darnell Nurse, is the fact that because the Jets are collapsing so much in front of their net, they're collapsing three or four guys in front of the net, the guys on the blue line are going to get that opportunity to get the puck. They are going to get that opportunity. And the funny thing is that Nurse and Barry are kind of the same, like Puljujärvi, in a sense that they get the puck at the blue line, they're looking for McDavid. Where's Connor McDavid? Let's look for McDavid. This is not a team that shoots the puck and goes to get it in the dirty areas. This is not a team built that way. But they have to do that in the playoffs. Like, the goals that come in the regular season are a lot different than the ones that come in the playoffs. In the playoffs, you've got to get your shots through, for one. And that's something that the Oilers have struggled with. And Barry's got a bomb. But if that bomb doesn't help, if it goes off a guy's shin pad and going back the other way. And I think that's one of the things that the Oilers are worried about. Nurse is a little better of getting his shots through, but he doesn't have the bomb that Barry does. But these guys, it's going to be constant. These guys have to jump into the rush a bit more. They have to kind of create a bit more. And to be honest, a game where it goes back and forth, I think benefits the Oilers. And I think they know that. And you saw some of the games in the regular season, they were back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, because the Oilers were not afraid to play that game. They were not afraid to take chances offensively, knowing that they were going to give up some chances defensively. It was like 80s hockey back then. And as long as they got the save, they were fine. And I know the Jets don't want to play that game. The Jets don't want to be suckered into that. But I think it's really cognizant on the Oilers defensemen to jump in the rush, that when they get the puck at the blue line, to step into those offensive situations, to shoot the puck a lot more. And I think that's going to open the game up. The Oilers have to find a way to open the game up, to create spaces, to stretch it out, if you will. And they can't be afraid to give up odd man rushes if they want to get odd man rushes. Because I think if it turns into a rush game, then I think that benefits the Edmonton Oilers. And the Jets do not want that. They know that's going to benefit the Edmonton Oilers. They know the Oilers are a much better rush team than they are. The Jets are more of a cycle team, work the puck down low, get it back, and do those type of things. And I think when it comes to activating the defensemen, Barry and Nurse and some of those other guys, they have to do that. You're not going to get any offense from Larson and Kulikov. Like, you guys know Kulikov really well. That's a pretty good pairing. That's a pretty good defensive pairing. They're great, but they're not going to get any offense at all. You're not going to get anything from them. I think Larson had four goals and he was celebrating. Yeah, four goals on the year. That's a career high for me. And Kulikov doesn't provide any offense at all. So the only guys that provide offense on the back end are Barry and Nurse. And Ethan Bear has a little bit of offensive ability. So they have three guys that have a little bit of offensive ability, but that's about it. But when you're trying to activate those guys, you got to say to them, listen, we got to activate you. You got to jump in the rush. And so now you're asking guys like Kulikov, like Larson, okay, who have no offensive instincts at all. Not that I've seen from Kulikov. You guys might know Kulikov better than I do, but he doesn't seem to have a lot of offensive instincts. He's a defense first guy. Now you're asking those guys, okay, you're going to have to get into the slot. You're going to have to shoot the puck a little more. You're going to have to not be afraid to jump in a rush. And that's something that's completely out of their comfort zone, because those guys are shut down guys. Totally, and they have no offense. But if you need some offense from your back end, you're gonna have to get everyone to kind of contribute.
Derek Van Diest is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Oilers and the Jets series. The Jets leading 2-0. Game 3 goes tomorrow evening back here in Winnipeg. Derek, of course, covers the Oilers for Post Media.
You know, Derek, just before I ask you my question, just to give you a little insight, when we were on 1290 on TSN here in Winnipeg, we used to run a contest for a Jet who scored a Jets goal, and you had to kind of guess who got the you know, a caller would call on, and they'd say, oh, we thought it was this player. And one of the options was Dmitry Kulikov. But, of course, he hadn't scored a goal that year. So he's not exactly a player who provides a lot of offense. We used to give that away. We'd say, people, don't select Dmitry Kulikov. He's not the guy who has a goal. He doesn't have a goal yet this season. So you're right. Not a guy that you're expecting to provide a lot of offense. Although he had a little bit of a nice rush yesterday. You know, the one thing I wanted to ask you about, though, is the physicality of this series. Is that something that's a little unexpected? Whether you believe the hit numbers or not, I think they're about 120-87 in favor of the Jets by the official count. Whether that's accurate is a question mark, but by the official count on the NHL website, that's what they have it at. Do you think that's an element? Because this isn't something that we've seen a lot from the Winnipeg Jets per se this year. This isn't the Jets team from a few years ago that had big bruisers on it, but yet they're playing a physical game. Do you think that caught the Oilers a little unaware?
A little bit, and yeah, it's funny because, yeah, that hit counter in that game one, I think the guy was leaning on the button or something and then realized, like, oh, my God, because the hits were like bang, bang. Like, if you breathe by, you know, breeze by a guy, they were counting that as a hit. I think both coaches got a chuckle out of that. They looked at the hit numbers and go, really? That's surprising to me. But it's funny because this Canadian division, this All-North division, is not a black and blue bruiser division. It's not. It's a division built on skill and speed. And it's interesting because when the Oilers played in the Pacific Division, when you had the Kings and San Jose and Anaheim, there were heavy teams that you had to go in there and you were going to pay the price to go in there. So the Oilers in 2017 kind of built themselves a heavy team. They had Patrick Maroon. They had guys like that. They had Cassian Bourn. So they had big, heavy guys. They had Lucic. So they built that big, heavy team. And then they went away from that. So they got rid of Lucic. They got rid of Maroon. They got rid of some of their bigger, heavier guys. Because in this division, it's not a big, heavy division. But like I said, I love the fact the Jets are so playoff experienced that they know what it takes to win the playoffs. And they know that, say, smaller guys, you got to throw your body around. You got to make hits. You got to finish the play. You got to finish everything off. Every little thing. Every finishing off a hit is a huge thing in the playoffs, and they understand that and they see that. And I think the Oilers are starting to realize that. They're going, oh my God, you know, in the regular season, guys would peel off and they wouldn't finish their checks on me. Mm-hmm. They just peel off and let me go. Now I got to fight through checks. I got to get hit. I got guys grabbing at me when I'm trying to skate down the ice. And that's what happens in the playoffs. And I think the Oilers have to realize that regular season hockey is a lot different than playoff hockey. And you look at the teams that are successful in the playoffs. Our teams that are strong and heavy and really make you pay the price and try to wear you down. And I think the Jets realize that. And I think they have the advantages because they do have those three lines and those four lines that they can roll. And they can go out there and say, open the gates, just keep rolling. Because there's, like you said, there's not a lot of drop-off in those lines. Whereas the Oilers have huge drop-off between their first, second, and third lines. There's a huge gap. Especially if they play Draisaitl and McDavid together, there's a big gap between line number one and line number two. And then there's an even bigger drop between line number three. And so if I'm a third and fourth line guy, I'm like, I'm going to bring some physicality to this, but then I can't take a penalty. Like, I can't do something stupid. And I think that really is playing a part in this. And their most physical guy is Josh Archibald, who's like 5'11", 100
little ball of pounds.
He's a little guy. And then you have Kyler Yamamoto, who's kind of like that water bug that just get out of my, like he's in there and he's trying to be physical. You can't have 5'7" guys being physical. Like, that's not going to work for you. You need the bigger guys to be physical. And I think the Oilers have to realize that, but they're just so terrified of taking a penalty. They're so terrified of going out there and not contributing in a sense that, okay, it's addition by subtraction. I can't take a penalty. If I go out there and it's an even shift and I come off 45 seconds and we're 0-0, that's a good shift for your third and fourth line. And you need more than that. And you have to provide more than that. And the Jets, they figured it out. They're being physical. They're being hard on McDavid and Draisaitl. And those guys knew it was coming because the Canadians played them that way. The Leafs played them that way. And the Jets, to an extent, played them that way during the regular season. So they know that they're going to get hooked and held and grabbed and interfered with, and they have to fight through that, and they're trying their best to fight through that. But they don't have guys on their end doing the same thing to the Jets' top guys. Like, I don't see anyone grabbing Wheeler. I don't see anyone grabbing Scheifele. I don't see anyone doing that to those guys. And the Oilers have to do that. If if the referees are going to say, hey, you guys settle it, we're staying out of it. Like, Mark Jonette never calls a penalty. Like, I don't know what he does out there. Like, there was five penalties last night. Jonette didn't call any of them. Like, Jonette's out for a skate. And I think the only thing, like, it's funny because we were talking about this last night. Does this guy ever call a penalty? Like, if things happen right in front of him, and the guy 200 feet away is calling a penalty. And Jonette's kind of like he's out for a Sunday skate. Unless you decapitate a guy, I'm not calling a penalty. And I think that's one of the situations there is that you kind of have to, okay, if they're letting stuff go, then you have to use that leverage. And so as long as they stay consistent, I think that's one of the issues as well with the officiating in this league is they'll let guys wrestle each other in the corner. They come out and then they'll call a chintzy hook or a chintzy whatever slash or something like that. So I think that's kind of an issue as well. But yeah, the owners do have to get into that playoff mode. And one of the issues as well is that the owners don't have a lot of playoff experience. It's one thing to have regular season experience. When you get into the wars, if you haven't been there, the only way you can do it is like gain experiences by being there. And the owners haven't been there. This is only their third playoff appearance since 2006. Like, that's a long time to be out of the playoffs. That's a long time to be really a bad hockey club. And people were talking about, well, they got playoff experience last year. I don't consider the play-in a playoff experience. And they were out in four games. They you know, before people even settled in for the playoffs, they were already out of it. So I think that's a big issue right now is the Jets' playoff experience is really coming through.
Derek Van Deest covers the Edmonton Oilers for Post Media. Derek, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. This was a great appearance. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Derek. There he goes. That was some great insight into the Edmonton Oilers, the Jets opponent. Of course, game three goes tomorrow night. Game four goes Monday night. Post-game shows right back here on our YouTube channel after each and every Winnipeg Jets playoff game and prior to that regular season game. Let's take a break. When we come back, much more on the Jets and the Oilers. We'll look around at all of the playoff series. Seth Rohrabaugh, our good friend from Pittsburgh, going to join us as well. Much more to come. It's a Saturday morning. You literally are not allowed out of your house, so stay with us. We're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. We are back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Nice to see so many of you joining us on a rainy Saturday here in Winnipeg. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Our friends at Bernstein's taking some time right now to do some renovations to the restaurant. Going to be back better than ever before as soon as those renovations are done. Hopefully in time, aligned with the end of this code red experience that we seem to be trapped in a groundhog day of. So our friends at Bernstein's, they have sandwiches and salads still available. Everything in their freezer section and their soups. And certainly is a good day for soup given the weather. Check them out at bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, I thought Derek Van Deest was a great guest there. Really insightful into the Oilers. And, you know, I thought he was forthcoming and honest about the team's struggles in that, you know, their off-season plan was basically, you know, here's $1 million to anybody who's willing to take our $1 million. And let's see if what they can hit on that. Whereas the Jets, you know, with their bottom, you know, their fourth line had a similar approach. You know, Trevor Lewis on the PTO, that was a child that was just emerging from behind Ezzie's head there. Trevor Lewis.
Yeah, that was my half-naked son, Ruben.
There you go. I mean, at least you're not, at least you're still fully clothed as far as we know. So that should be,
he just wants to be a part of the show, boys. Like, he knows we're hot right now. We've been on, you know, a few times in the last 24 hours and he wanted to, you know, chime in. He's just amazed that the Jets continue to shut down McDavid and Draisaitl. He's just,
well, yeah, I'll tell you what, I've seen some of your insight. I'm sure that a toddler really can't do any worse than some of the gibberish that comes out of your mouth on a regular basis. I just thought, you know, this Oilers team right now, it really is their lack of depth that is, you know, causing problems for them. Because the strategy all along for the Jets was obvious. It was going to be do what you can to try and neutralize McDavid and Draisaitl. and they're more successful than we expected, I would say, or more successful than I've expected, and there's nobody behind them to pick up the slack. And that's really where the biggest problem right now for the Edmonton Oilers is that if the Jets can continue to do what they're doing against the Oilers' best players, and there's certainly a big if there, if they can, there's just nothing behind them. I mean, you heard the options that Dave Tippett has available to him, though those aren't really, those are hope and prayer options, Dave, more than anything else.
No, I think that this is a team that's looking for answers, and there aren't many. And because what have we talked about with this Oilers team consistently all year is a lack of depth. Mike Smith's been excellent. I mean, we're not going to, you can't really malign what he's done for this Oilers team throughout the course of this year.
He's got a 943 save percentage in these playoffs. Pardon me, 946 save percentage. So you can't say it's goaltending. He's given up three goals at 5-on-5.
He can't score. I mean, he probably could score because he's got an excellent shot. We know how well he is at making the outlet pass. We saw it last night. But the truth is, he's not going to be able to score goals for you. But he's been excellent in keeping the puck out of the net, which is all you can ask for from your goaltender. And at the end of the day, what does it come down to? It comes down to the depth. And so we've seen the depth from the Jets. We've seen a commitment to defense from the Jets. The Oilers don't have an answer. Again, putting Dreisaitl and McDavid together wasn't the answer. Mm-hmm. Keeping them separated doesn't seem to be the answer because the Jets have managed to, like, if you offload that, if you really do remove that, quote, nuclear option from the Oilers, doesn't that allow the Jets to really keep things even more mitigated than they were before? Because at least when you had those two on, there's the potential for explosivity. But, like, mm-hmm. if you don't, I mean, I'm looking at this Jets team, and I keep saying it, and I'm a bit of a broken record here. We might need a new analogy to bring it into the 2021 year that we are in. Maybe a broken,
HDMI cable?
Yeah, like are we a broken, yeah, exactly, a broken HDMI cable. But, you know, it doesn't seem like the Jets have fallen off in any of their play from any of the lines from a defensive perspective. So I think, and again, the big key for us was what was that top line of the Winnipeg Jets going to do? When you see what they've done, it's hard to figure out how the Oilers are going to overcome this when Connor Hellebuyck is playing the way he's playing and the Jets defensively are playing the way they're playing.
That's actually a funny one as well. Frank obviously saying they should have kept them apart, but also in the chat from Mall Paris saying you're a corrupt MP3 file instead of a broken record. That's pretty funny there as well in the chat. So good on you there, Mall Paris, for pulling up that one. Let me ask you guys this question, though. What about Derek's suggestion? What did you think about his suggestion of maybe the Oilers go, instead of loading up a top line or instead of even playing Dreisaitl on the wing on a second line or whatever, what happens if they go, up the middle, instead you go with McDavid, Dreisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Is that something that you could see Dave Tippett trying to, experiment with, again, to try and do something to impact the lineup? And maybe you go with your centerman being so strong and it doesn't all, I mean, obviously it matters who your wingers are, but maybe that just helps your wingers as well, because it seems like right now, especially after going with that pairing up Dreisaitl and McDavid together, I just think it was too early in the series for him having to do so for the course of a game. I thought it was a bit of a panicky move from the Oilers head coach.
Yeah, well, you think it's panicky, Drew. I don't think it's panicky. I just think it's something he has to do, right? And we've seen it, like, you see it a lot with those two, right? Like, and before Dave Tippett as well. But what it does, and we talked about this with Derek Van Dieste, if you put McDavid and Dreisaitl together, it allows the other team to, it's an advantage to the Jets or any other team that's playing the Oilers, but obviously specifically in this case, the Jets, because then you don't have a very dangerous second line, right? And so, going back to your question, Drew, about Nugent Hopkins up the middle, he's obviously, spent some time up the middle. He was a, natural center with the Red Deer Rebels, but most of this year he's been on the wing. I don't know how much exactly he's played up the middle, but I don't think it's a lot. But yeah, I mean, if you're Dave Tippett right now, and you're looking at your lineup and you're saying, okay, like the only goal we've scored comes from Jesse Puljujarvi. McDavid and Dreisaitl are, having a lot of trouble right now. And, the credit goes to the Jets defense, but why not look at these different types of options? Because I think, Derek mentioned this, Derek Van Deest, obviously, for those who weren't, you know, watching when he was on of Post Media, he's saying, like, you know, Tyler Ennis, I mean, this isn't the same guy that scored, you know, 20 goals for the Buffalo Sabres.
No.
Like, this is an older Tyler Ennis that, you know, maybe he comes in and, you know, you catch lightning in a bottle, right, Drew? And he maybe, you know, has a good game and scores a goal. But, you know, they're going to live and die by McDavid and Draisaitl, and to a lesser extent, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jesse Puljujarvi. But, you know, the big boys have to score. And so I wouldn't be shocked if he puts, Nugent-Hopkins up the middle. But I think what's more likely is you see McDavid and Draisaitl split up. Maybe a guy like Alex Chiasson, that was one guy that's had some success against the Jets, Dave. Maybe Chiasson is a guy that gets an elevated role in the top six, because as Drew mentioned, Dominic Cahoon, he only played 8 minutes or 8.5 minutes, whatever it was. He hasn't had much of an impact. And you know, neither has Kaylor Yamamoto. Yamamoto is a really skilled player. He's a first round pick. Yamamoto's a guy that, you know, hopefully for the Oilers, not for the Jets, you know, hopefully he gets going. But, you know,
the Jets have been treating Kaylor Yamamoto like the Anaheim Ducks treated Toby Enstrom in the playoff series back in 2015.
Yeah, it's good comparable.
They've been physical against him on absolutely every single shift, just trying to get
Matty Perreault was driving him nuts.
The advantage the Jets have is that there's only so many what I'll describe as threats on the Oilers. Now, their two biggest threats are probably the two biggest threats in the entire NHL, or two of the top four or five biggest threats in the entire NHL in McDavid and Draisaitl. But after that, if you can neutralize Yamamoto, if you can neutralize Puljujarvi, if you can neutralize Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, well, I mean, you're in a good position. And the Jets just, I mean, they've had a very good approach to the first two games, and, you know, full credit to Jets head coach Paul Maurice, from my perspective, in how they've been able to really do that and how they've really been able to get under their skin and frustrate them and really, you know, prevent them from having impact on this series.
And the only thing I'll add quickly. Clearly, there's nothing of significance that happened in the Jets' availability, because not one of our friends who are there, because obviously we're here doing the show, have tweeted a thing of relevance. So whatever the Jets were saying this morning, it wasn't significant, I would imagine. But if it is, we'll have it up on illegalcurve.com.
And with that, we're pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend Seth Rorabaugh to talk a little bit about another series that's happening in these playoffs. Obviously, our attention here, Seth, has been dramatically focused on the Winnipeg Jets. But later this afternoon, the Pittsburgh Penguins have an opportunity to take a 3-1 stranglehold on their series against the New York Islanders. Nice to see you, Seth. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
I appreciate the invitation as always, guys. Thank you.
Our pleasure, Seth. You know, I look at this Pittsburgh Islanders series, and I think that the Penguins, to me, are a team that has been disrespected. I mean, lots of people in and around the NHL, especially here in Canada, where we didn't pay that much attention to what was going on down south this year, were, I think, probably surprised to see that the Penguins were the best team in their division at season's end. And all the talk was about, you know, the Islanders and Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello and his offseason moves, or his trade deadline moves, getting Kyle Palmieri. But the Penguins went out and very stealth-like absolutely stole Jeff Carter, and he's been absolutely dominant for the Penguins so far in the first three games. And now the Penguins have an opportunity to really, you know, take a stranglehold, as I mentioned, on that series against the Islanders.
Yeah, I mean, the Penguins, you know, there was a lot of sour taste after, you know, the bubble last year, and they got knocked out by the Canadiens. And you know, the big three, meaning Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, I mean, they were all a year older. They were a couple years now removed from their most recent Stanley Cup title. And, having seen, you know, quote-unquote dynasties like the Los Angeles Kings and Chicago Blackhawks in recent years really, really fade away, a lot of people were wondering if the Penguins were kind of going down that road. But they quietly retooled, you know, the supplemental parts of the roster. And, you know, they really relied on a lot of the depth that they had to, you know, lead on this year with, you know, Evgeny Malkin out for a couple of weeks, Jason Zucker out for a couple of weeks, Brandon Tana, if you know, your fans in Winnipeg love that guy, he was out for a few weeks. So they really relied on a lot of the supplemental depth that Jim Rutherford, the former general manager, put in place before he resigned. And, you know, you have Ron Hextall come in, and he brings in a very familiar face to himself and Jeff Carter from Los Angeles. And just been a revelation here, you know. He leads this team in playoff goals so far. Three goals in three games here was a huge part in their victory in game three, getting two goals, including their first power play goal. So, they've built up their depth, whether it was under Jim Rutherford or, you know, supplemented here by Ron Hextall. And I think the success that they enjoyed in the regular season, winning the division, as well as, you know, their 2-1 lead here, is a testament to what they've accrued in terms of their depth.
Seth, I texted you and I joked like Brandon Tanev scored the game winner in game three. So we were contractually obligated to get you on the show. Big part of that TLC line with Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp going back to that 2018 West final run for the Jets. But I mean, just how important has Tanev been? Because, you know, when Tanev signed, you know, going back a couple of years, you know, with the Penguins, it was kind of like, okay, they gave him a lot of money and they gave him a lot of years, but, you know, he's banging and crashing. And he's obviously, you know, contributing with goals as well. So just, you know, how big has he been? Obviously, you know, Sidney Crosby, Jeff Carter, Evgeny Malkin, Jake Gensel. I mean, these are the guys that are obviously expected to carry the load offensively. But Tanev has had a great series so far.
Yeah, going back to when he signed in 2019, that offseason, the Penguins had, you know, they were swept out of the first round that year in the playoffs by these Islanders. And Jim Rutherford, the general manager at the time, just outright ripped the team, saying, maybe some of these guys just, you know, they're happy, have won a couple cups and they're content, and maybe this team isn't hungry anymore. So he goes out and trades away Phil Kessel, you know, a fantastic player. Olli Maatta was a key contributor to the two most recent Stanley Cup titles here, clears their salary cap space so he can go out and sign Brandon Tanev. And in terms of, you know, establishing a hunger and drive and desire and all those kind of intangible things, you know, Brandon Tanev delivered on that tenfold. And I think you're starting to see it really manifest itself even more here in these playoffs. He had the breakaway, I think, in game two where he crashed into the net. And Matt Martin, he's a pretty tough customer, you know, cross-checks him to the ice afterwards, even though he's injured himself. Brandon Tanev kind of pops right up and starts getting in Scott Mayfield's face with the Islanders, who's only about 6'5", 220, whereas Tanev's 6'1", 180. He's not backing down at all. So oddly enough, though, I don't know how much you guys saw of game three. I mean, that third period in game three just devolved into pure chaos. I mean, there was one point all five players on the ice from both teams were thrown in the penalty box. There were penalties up and down the ice. There were about five goals, back and forth there. And Zach Aston-Reese, you know, Brandon Tanev, one of Brandon's current line mates, he was saying, you know, how are you guys keeping calm? And he said Tanev, of all people, was the one telling them, stay composed, stay with it, you know, don't get goaded into things. You know, meanwhile, Brandon Tanev looks like, you know, an axe murderer sometimes. But he's never going to be a guy that's, you know, 20 goals, 50 points, whatever. But he brings so much to this team intangibly. And, you know, he ends up getting the game-winning goal in game three here with a deflection late in things here. So, again, they brought Brandon Tanev in for a lot of reasons. And I think he's met those expectations or supplied what they've wanted him tenfold.
Seth Rohrbaugh is a guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Seth covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Penguins up 2-2 against the New York Islanders in their first round playoff matchup. Game four goes in about 3 hours' time later this afternoon as the Penguins look to take a 3-1 lead.
You know, Seth, one of the most probably unexpected trades was the Penguins acquiring Jeff Carter, and he's just looked like a completely revitalized player with the Penguins. I was looking back at his numbers, 9 goals in his 14 regular season games, hit 8 and like 40 with the Kings. Has he just looked like a reborn player? And what has he said in terms of, you know, being in Pittsburgh and that fit within that system?
Yeah, he has looked like a reborn player. It's almost kind of a classic case, and you're on a bad team, you're not going anywhere. You go to a team that has a chance to win, do some damage, and, you know, you get that adrenaline boost. And, you know, the one thing that they've done differently with him is, you know, for the most of the part in Los Angeles here, he played right wing. You wonder at 36, 37, I forget what the age is exactly right now, but you know, whatever age is, you know, does he have the wheels to still play center and, you know, handle some of the back-checking duties, the defensive responsibilities? But they slotted him over to center, particularly because, you know, Evgeny Malkin was still out with a right knee injury, so they kind of needed someone there to kind of, you know, pivot their second line for the time being. But he's just fitted right in. And, I always certainly realized Jeff Carter was a pretty adept goal scorer, but, you know, having not really seen him on a day-to-day basis, I never realized how good a shooter he is. When some of these goals he scores, particularly, say, in game three here the other night, you know, he just kind of lobs it on net the way it looks like it. Then when it arrives at the net, it's like a pinpoint top shelf shot. Whereas, you know, someone like Brian Rust, you know, is a solid 20 goal scorer. He needs to squeeze splinters out of his stick to pinpoint a shot like that. So this is a guy that just, I mean, he's always had the goal scoring acumen. It was fair to wonder where he was at, you know, late 30s here, but he's just been revitalized. And now with Evgeny Malkin back in the lineup, he's a third line center, you know, going against the Islanders, third defensive pairing and, you know, third and fourth line. So he's benefiting quite a bit here in terms of the matchups with all three of those centers in the lineup. And on top of that too, he's also, you know, established something of a rapport here with Jared McCann, who's kind of bounced around the Penguins lineup in recent years and never really had a line mate that he could, you know, bolt down, be bolted onto. And Those two have really, really become a tandem here and really developed some chemistry here. So, Jeff Carter, and on top of that, too, you know, the Penguins got Jeff Carter for about half his salary, too. You know, Los Angeles retained some of that salary, so that's another key part of this. So, and they have him for another year here. So, by any stretch of the imagination, it's worked out here for Jeff Carter so far.
Undoubtedly. Seth Rohrbaugh, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Seth covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. So, Seth, you know, speaking of the return of Evgeny Malkin, well, now up the middle, you got a pretty good trio with Crosby and Malkin and Jeff Carter there as well. You know, are the Penguins sort of, did they enter these playoffs, and I sort of alluded to this off the start of the interview, did they enter these playoffs maybe being looked over? Maybe, you know, I don't know if they're too old or you just never thought, you know, people didn't think of them as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. Do you think that maybe sort of stuck in their craw a little bit? Like, they're like, hey, we want our division. We got a pretty good trio of forwards up the middle. We got some decent goaltending. At least Tristan Jarry's looked better in games 2 and 3 than he did in game 1. Are the Penguins maybe sort of, you know, using that nobody believed in us, cliche to maybe fuel some of their drive in the first round so far?
I think for the most part, they tend to, they call it the outside noise. They tend to tune it out, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And I'm sure there's some guys out there that are well aware that they've been disrespected. I can tell you probably Chris Letang maybe feels that a lot of times on an individual basis. But I think for the most part, you know, they don't necessarily use that stuff as their main motivation. I just think, you know, they just want to win. They want to add another Stanley Cup banner there. Evgeny Malkin's talked about this for himself personally. If they can win another Stanley Cup here, he would be the first Russian player to have 4 Stanley Cup rings. For him individually, that means something. Sidney Crosby's just a hockey geek, a hockey nut. He just wants to win and compete and everything. So, and when you have Sidney Crosby kind of establishing that type of tone for you, everyone else on the roster, the other 19 players on the lineup sheet, have to follow suit. So, as far as them being disrespected, again, going back to what happened with them last year in the bubble, there were a lot of fair questions as far as, what this team had left, what this group had left. And even moving forward here, I mean, you have a new general manager in place. You know, Letang and Malkin have 1 year left on their contract going into next year. You have an expansion draft, you know, the salary cap's flat. So there's a lot of factors that might come into play in terms of some portions of this group being broken up here, just based on the reality of everything, whether they win the Stanley Cup or they get knocked out here in the first round. So I think there's motivation just in the fact that it's almost kind of like a last dance situation, you know, going back to the Chicago Bulls documentary from ESPN this past year. The time's kind of running out here for these big three guys. And if you want to include guys like Brian Dumoulin and Jake Guentzel and some others into that group as well, but change is going to happen here at some point. So I think these guys just want to try to maximize what time they have left, no matter how much is left, in trying to, you know, win another cup here.
Has he?
Is he frozen?
Sorry, boys. My internet's a little choppy out here in rural Manitoba. But Seth,
it's not very good here in Uniondale, New York, by the way.
Didn't hear that one, but hopefully you guys can hear me loud and clear. And more importantly, hopefully Seth can hear this question. But just wanted to ask you quickly about Mike Matheson and the impact he's had on this defense, because obviously, you know, Letang and Dumoulin, that's your top pair. For me, Matheson has really solidified that top four for the Pens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would tag in Cody Ceci there as well. In fact, I would say Cody Ceci's probably been their third most consistent defenseman over the course of the season. But Ceci and Matheson as a pairing have been fantastic. Classic case with Pittsburgh. They always try to bring in reclamation projects, particularly on defense. And they've had success with guys like Justin Schultz and Ian Cole and things like that, and some failures with guys like Jack Johnson. But these two reclamation projects have been fantastic. The Matheson trade was not popular at the time because they dealt away Patrick Hornquist, who was a big part of the 2 Stanley Cup titles here in recent years, and was a very popular player. You know, his nickname was Horny, so I don't know how you ever can, you know, be more popular than something like that. But Mike Matheson, I mean, early parts of the season, he looked kind of lost. You know, there wasn't really a true training camp. He dealt with a bit of an injury earlier this season. He kind of looked lost a little bit, but once he got a little bit more acclimated, started working with Todd Reirden, the assistant coach here who oversees the defenseman, started figuring out, just looked so smooth and so natural in this defense. A guy who was never afraid to take chances, go up ice, use his skating speed, which is a big part of how the Penguins want to play, you know, getting the puck up through the neutral zone to the forwards with speed. he was a natural fit with that as soon as he got a little bit more acclimated. Had a little bit of a setback late in the season. He took a clearing play from Tristan Jarry right in the face and, you know, suffered some kind of facial injury and missed the last five or six games of the regular season and kind of looked a little iffy in game one just coming back in the lineup. But, again, with him and Cody Ceci, they've really given this team a really, really reliable second pairing. And you know, it's allowed them to move Marcus Pettersson and John Marino, two younger guys, down to the third pairing, whereas last year, Jack Johnson and Justin Schultz, for whatever reason, just did not work out for him. And I thought those two were a big reason why they lost to Montreal in that qualifying round in the bubble. But just they're just a much deeper team on defense, and Mike Matheson's a major part of that.
Seth Robar, our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Penguins. Seth covers the team for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He's in Long Island, where the Penguins and the Islanders will play game four of their series later on this afternoon. Seth's appearance on the show is brought to you by Boston Pizza. Boston Pizza has the perfect starting lineup tonight with the BP Game Day Meal Deal. Choose two of your favorite medium gourmet pizzas, along with a triple order of Boston's famous wings, plus two dipping sauces, all for $54.99, available for takeout and delivery only at bostonpizza.com or download the MyBP app.
You know, Seth, I've been a big fan of yours for many, many years, going back to the empty netter days, which is, you know, something that we here at illegalcurve.com remember, of course, that connectivity between us. But I'm telling you, it's not because of you. It just happens that I happen to be wearing a Pirates hat. So it's not because of your appearance. I have an extensive hat collection. I grabbed this one randomly, but it turned out to be good because, of course, you're on the show. And, you know, I was reading your empty thoughts column, which is obviously from the empty netters. And I think one of the things that, you know, stuck out to me was Sidney Crosby. You know, he has the one goal in the series, but it's the goals that he's preventing. And Sidney Crosby is just that player that, you know, there's an article about, I didn't really read it, but I saw it garner a lot of attention about Sidney Crosby and you know, whether he should be moved and that sort of thing. But it's amazing to me that he's a guy who just doesn't get a lot of attention. People aren't talking about him, but it's all of those things that he does not scoring that is just so impactful for this team, isn't it?
Yeah. Mike Sullivan, you know, he's almost like a broken record when he talks about Sid in this regard. He calls him the most complete 200-foot player in the game. And that's maybe not something you would have said about Sid his first couple of years in the league, you know, as an 18, 19, 20-year-old, whatever. But, you know, with time, he's really devoted himself to playing such a complete game. You know, his first couple of years in the league, he was like 38-39% in faceoffs, and he just kind of focused on that, made it like an offseason priority for him early in his career. And now he's, you know, one of the better faceoff guys in the league. He's usually up around like 53-56%. Only guys that ever really beat him in faceoffs are, like, you know, the really dominant ones like Patrice Bergeron at this point. So he's a guy that just any little rough edge in his game, he'll work on it maniacally after practice and things like that. And you know, the thing that really stands out to me now about him at this stage of his career is how much he goes out of his way to make teammates feel welcome, whether it's a new guy like Mike Matheson, who's a veteran coming to the league, or even a young guy who's maybe just kind of hanging on and just getting his first chance. You know, one of their last practices here in Pittsburgh before the playoffs opened, it was Chris Letang and Sidney Crosby working on a little kind of like passing plays in and around the crease with Alex DiOrio, is an undrafted goalie. He's like fourth or fifth in their organizational depth chart. You know, all due respect to him, he's probably the most relevant player in the organization. But Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang are each going out of their way to make him feel welcome, make him feel more part of this team, and obviously help him, you know, improve in some areas with, you know, plays around the net. So, and over the years, Sidney Crosby's done that so often when, you know, reporters were still allowed in the locker room before the pandemic. I mean, they would put all the guys up from their American League affiliate in Wilkes-Barre. They would stick them in stalls around Sid, and Sid would just kind of hold court with a lot of those guys and just talk to them about everything, you know, things on the ice or things off the ice, where to go eat, you know, just things to do with your money. Just he's embraced this as his team. It might be Mario Lemieux's team. You know, the practice facility has Mario Lemieux's name on the building, but this is Sidney Crosby's team in a lot of ways. And he's doing everything he can to help this team win, get to another Stanley Cup. And again, he might not be a guy that's putting up 100 points every year and challenging McDavid for the scoring titles and things like that. But again, to quote Mike Sullivan, he's probably the most complete 200-foot player in the game.
Seth Rohrabaugh covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Seth will have coverage of today's Isles Penguins Game 4 going on in about a little less than 3 hours from now. Seth, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Appreciate the invitation as always, guys. Be well.
Be well, Seth. All the best.
Thanks to you. A lot,
there
Seth.
He goes. Seth Rohrabaugh joining us on the program. Let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the other playoff series around the NHL. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning. One final little segment for you as we wrap up on this fine rainy day. Stay home, stay safe, everybody. Of course, it is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy, and they're going to continue to do so just as soon as it is safe to do. They are 100% champing at the bit to get back open, to get everybody the laughter that they so badly need right now. Reminder, anytime a game goes to overtime, be it a Jets game or any game during the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's time for the hashtag ICOT pool, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tweet at Illegal Curve, use hashtag ICOT pool. Send us who you think is going to score the OT winner. If you choose correctly, you may win a prize from our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For more information about Rumors, check them out online, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, let's talk about some of the other series that have been taking place so far. Let's start with Montreal and Toronto. Game two goes later on tonight. The Habs winning game one in a dramatic fashion, but all the talk after game one was about the horrendous incident involving John Tavares, and we're thrilled to hear that, you know, as bad as it looked on Thursday night, it sounds like the injuries are, I'm not going to say mild because he has a concussion. There's nothing ever mild about a concussion, but that they are as best as you could have hoped for. Just a frightening moment, one of the scariest moments you're ever going to see in an on-ice incident. And then a stupid moment right afterwards with Nick Foligno demanding to fight Corey Perry as if Corey Perry and, you know, deliberately did that to John Tavares, which is so ridiculous. It's not even worth giving any credence to. I guess your thoughts about the Leafs and the Habs through one game.
Well, first off, Carey Price was unbelievable. But yeah, you're right, Drew. I mean, the incident surrounding the Leafs captain was obviously what took over, you know, everybody's attention. And you're right. I mean, all that matters right now is his health. And it looks like, you know, he's doing really good. He's responsive. And you mentioned, you know, scary incident. Sheldon Keefe said after the game, because of the fact that there weren't any fans in the stand, like, we know, guys, when something like that happens, it's going to be quiet in a building with 18,000 fans. But when there's no fans and it's even more quiet, you know, Keefe said that it was just absolutely, you know, horrific. So good to know that, you know, Tavares is healthy, and he's obviously not going to be back in the lineup. We mentioned Alex Galchenyuk is going to replace him on that second line. It looks like Nick Foligno, by the way, is going to play up the middle, guys, even though he's, you know, mainly been a winger this season and throughout his NHL career. So Nick Foligno is going to play with William Nylander and Alex Galchenyuk on that second line. So the Leafs are going to be desperate to win tonight. But you know, just overall, you know, a really impressive performance by the Canadians. Like, we've talked about, Paul Byron's a guy that I've always liked. He was on waivers not once, but twice this year, right? And he's kind of been more of that, you know, depth player. So, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about, Dave, with the Jets and Oilers series, right? Like Dominic Toninato, Tucker Poolman, you know, throw Paul Byron in there. You know, he's a guy that, you know, could have easily been claimed by another team. So, you know, just really impressive, and we'll see what happens, you know, here tonight. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure on this Leafs team. Like, we know, first place in the North Division, you know, we know that, you know, they have so many high priced star players on their team. So there's going to be, you know, extra motivation for them, you know, with John Tavares out of the lineup to win game two here. But I think, you know, going into the series, a lot of people were picking the Leafs to sweep the Habs. Obviously that's not going to happen here, but, you know, first time that these teams have played in decades, and, you know, game two should be absolutely amazing tonight. But, you know, other players are going to have to step up. And one of those players is going to be Nick Foligno, now, you know, playing in that second line center role in place of Tavares.
Yeah. And look, this is a Montreal team that we thought, similar to the Jets, were being overlooked by a lot of the pundits who were picking the Leafs, not necessarily, like, as he says, either to sweep them or to win five, maybe six games. But I when you have a guy like Carey Price, who is a world-class goaltender, even if he hasn't been all-world this season, and you have a team, you know, Josh Anderson's a player I really like. I think he's, you know, just a – he looked – when remember that game against the Jets when Montreal was in town. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this guy's a beast. And he got hurt, I think, in the first period left, and the Jets ended up winning the game. But when he was in the lineup, he looked really good. Like, physical, he looked like a force. Looked like a player who's a lot to handle. Kind of looked like a guy who you'd want to have in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, I agree with that. So, and you've got the guy, a guy like Brendan Gallagher, who we've talked about it with our good friend Mark Dumont, who's such a lifeblood of this Montreal team and drags guys into the fight. Well, you're going to want to have guys dragged into the fight. Yeah, I agree. I thought that Corey Perry, I mean, nobody's going to pretend like Corey Perry's a clean player and he deserves the benefit of the doubt. But in this instance, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. There's no malintent there. And so, for him to have to fight, I mean, and Nick Foligno's like, well, he's my captain. It's like, he's been your captain for 10 minutes. Yeah. And if you're, look, like I said, I think it's stupid when guys have to answer for clean hits. You know, if you want to make a guy answer for a dirty hit, I've got no issue with that. If Corey Perry takes a run at your guy and he takes out his knee, takes him out, you know, in the head, whatever he does, if it's dirty, then you can make Corey Perry answer. And I have zero issues with that. But when Corey Perry clearly didn't do anything that was with intent, and it's just unfortunate, then he has to go for it. Like, what is the value? I don't see it.
And Foligno, Dave, you know, sorry to cut you off. I was going to say, Foligno did say after the game, you know, that he didn't see the replay, and basically all he saw was John Tavares. Well, and it's possible, Drew, but I agree with you. They have ice pads
on the bench, and they have a Jumbotron above them. Yep, and maybe the Jumbotron didn't show the play, but I can assure you.
I imagine it wouldn't have.
I probably
it was a meaningless fight. And I don't think, I think, you know, most people agree that Corey, it was one of those freak accidents, guys. Like, yes. It's like one of those things, like, you know, you're slipping on ice outside, right? Like, mm-hmm. Honestly, like, it was one of those things, like, you don't anticipate it. And it was so awkward the way he fell. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. When somebody gets injured like that in any sport, it's that player's health, that athlete's health that matters. Yeah. So, like, let's focus on what's most important here. Health is more important than hockey. Like, at the end of the day, hockey's a sport. We all love it. We cover it. You know, we follow these teams religiously. But John Tavares is being stretchered out. What happened? And when he tried to get up and he fell back down, that all of a sudden, you know, we're all human beings, right? Like, yeah. All this other stuff is just noise. All that matters is that hopefully he's able to come back in the series. I don't know if that's going to happen.
No, he's got a spring. So he's got a
concussion. It's going to be tough for them to win this series without him. I'll tell you that much.
They came out earlier today while we were on air, and they said that he's, besides the concussion, which we already knew, he also sprained his MCL in a similar manner to Zach Hyman a few weeks ago. So, I mean, let's assume, and again, his health is foremost, hockey is secondary. He's at least out a couple of weeks because of the MCL injury, never mind the concussion. Exactly. So, I mean, you're not going to see John Tavares back during this series.
Maybe if the Leafs go deep, Drew, but you're right. It's going to be weeks at a minimum, might be months.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, who knows when and if, and it really doesn't matter. I mean, you know, in terms of like the whiplash effect, I mean, I go back to remember I think it was his rookie year, Jacob Trouba fell into the end boards relatively early in his rookie year, and he got stretchered off and he was out of the Jets lineup for a good while with sort of, you know, neck injury, neck ligaments, and anything when you're talking about neck or spinal cord or anything like that, you obviously are erring on the side of caution way more than anything else. So it's a huge loss for the Leafs in terms of the on-ice performance. It's a huge loss in the dressing room. The guy is the captain of the team. But, I mean, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they bounce back tonight against the Montreal Canadiens, given especially that Carey Price now looks like, you know, and you never know with Carey Price. Remember in the bubble last year against the Penguins, Carey Price was amazing. And so if that's the Carey Price that the Habs are going to get, and then it's going to be, and that's the Carey Price the Leafs have to deal with, then it's a serious problem for them in that they're going to have to really overcome a lot of hardship to, you know, win this series. It's now, it's a much closer series than it looked like on paper when you factor in the return to health of the Habs and the injury to Tavares. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight in game two between those two teams. The other major headline incident in the playoffs so far was Nazem Kadri losing his mind again. It's amazing that this guy just cannot focus in the playoffs to stop hurting his team. He's gone for the next 8 games. That certainly looks like it'll be, I mean, with the Avalanche currently up 3-0 on the St. Louis Blues. Assume that it's going to be one or two games left in this series and then a big chunk of the next series. Did Department of Player Safety get it right with the 8-game suspension for Kadri for his hit on Justin Falk?
Yeah, I mean, I can't see how they didn't. I mean, he's a repeat offender, regardless of how you define that, because usually I think it's that based on when his last incident was within a certain time frame, of course. But look, Kadri just makes it. I don't know how many regular season suspensions he has, but sure seems to like to get them in the playoffs. So Colorado is deep. I mean, they'll be able to sustain this without a major drop off. But I mean, it is a loss. I mean, he's a guy who's playing in their lineup. So he's not exactly a guy you didn't want to lose, of course, but he's got to be smart. I mean, this isn't the first time or the second time, right? This is, I don't know how many times Kadri's been suspended, but it feels like at least once a playoffs, he's doing something that gets him a call from player safety. We appreciate when guys can play on that line, but you got to be careful. I mean, you can't take risks like that. And it's such an unnecessary contact. That leaves Falk like on the ground and just immobile. And mm-hmm. We talk about it. Like, that's a situation where the guys have to have more respect for each other. You know, that's what these guys all talk about. Oh, we respect. Well, show a little more respect then, because that play by Kadri didn't show a lot of respect for his fellow NHLers.
Exactly right. The other playoff series, as I mentioned, Colorado leading 3-0 on St. Louis, Vegas leading 2-1 on the Minnesota Wild, a big win for Vegas in St. Paul a couple nights ago to retake the series lead there. Going on right now, Florida looking to even up the series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Nashville winning in double overtime last night to cut the Hurricanes lead to 2-1. Rod Brind'Amour.
What a beauty goal from Matt Duchene. Wow.
Yeah, beauty goal by Matt Duchene. If you read Rod Brind'Amour's comments post-game last night, very unhappy with the officiating and certainly was not shy about saying so. Might see a fine handed down to Rod the Bod of the Carolina Hurricanes. And Boston now with a commanding 3-1 lead over the Washington Capitals. They can put that series to bed tomorrow afternoon, which would be certainly a very quick dispatch of the Capitals during this first round of the playoffs. Final thoughts from you guys about the Winnipeg Jets before we wrap it up for this morning. And of course, remind everybody that all your latest Winnipeg Jets news is available on illegalcurve.com. So final thoughts from each of you about what you expect to see in game 3 tomorrow night between the Jets and the Oilers.
Yeah, well, and before I give my thoughts on Jets and Oilers, I would expect that Panthers and Lightning game to go to overtime, because two of the first three games have gone to overtime. So mm-hmm. Stay tuned for a possible third ICOT pool in that series. And shout out to Ontario's Ryan Lomberg, the unlikely hero, getting the overtime winner in game 3 for the Panthers. But yeah, guys, I mean, the big storyline is going to continue to be, can the Jets continue to shut down Dreisaitl and McDavid? But I also think, a big storyline, Dave, going into game 3 and 4 has to be, what kind of impact is that back-to-back going to have at home, right? Because, I mean, that's not really as much of a home advantage as you would like if you're the Jets. You'd like to keep Edmonton in Winnipeg a little bit longer. And I'm not just talking about, whether, Mike Smith, plays back-to-back, because I think we all expect Hellebuck to play both games. Why wouldn't you, the way he's played, through the first two games, only allowing the one goal, but just like what kind of toll it's going to have? Like, are you going to have, Nikolai Ehlers, first of all, are you going to, see him in game 3? Are you going to see him in game 4, or preferably both? And are you going to see some other maybe lineup changes, just, considering that if game 3 does go into overtime, or if it is one of those games that takes a physical toll, are you going to maybe see, a Jansen Harkins in the second game of the back-to-back? Are you going to see any moves, from the Oilers leading into game 3? We talked about, Tyler Ennis. We talked about maybe Caleb Jones comes in the back end. I think it's more likely that you would see a move, a player come in for the forward group for the Oilers. But, the big storyline in addition to that is, can the Jets win this game 3 and make this a very short series? The pressure is a little bit more on the Jets, to get it done at home. We know they've struggled at home, especially towards the end of the season. But The Jets are clearly in the driver's seat, and it's going to be, it should be a really good game here in game three. But, you know, those are some of the storylines I'm looking at right now. But right now, the story really is how they've played defensively, how we've seen a team commitment to defense, and how well Connor Hellebuck has been able to shut down the Oilers' big guns.
David?
It's hard to follow that up. I think Ezzie covered every base, so I'm not going to repeat the points simply just for the simple fact of repeating the points. Our friend Mark Sports Video in the chat, he asked me to give him a shout-out. He put out a video to show some fans some of his thoughts on the last game, so if you want to go check that out, Mark Sports Video has a YouTube channel. You can go check out his channel and see some of his videos. Maybe drop a like if you like this show. We always appreciate it. Always helps us with our algorithm. So maybe drop a like, subscribe, ring that bell, do all those things that we need you to do that helps it going. We love the chat. We love to see it going. But no, everybody enjoy their rainy Saturday. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
Exactly right. Tomorrow night, the post-game show, right around, assuming no overtime, maybe 9 o'clock, 9:15, with I think a 6:30, 6:40 scheduled start time. And then we'll be back much later on Monday night for the late night post-game show between...
I'm still trying to figure out why game four... Sorry, Drew, I cut you off, but I'm still trying to figure out why it starts at 8:45. Like, why not 8:30? I don't get what the 8:45 start time is, but
they're staggering it for television. That's all I can tell you. I'll be honest. I didn't know I'd ever heard of the channel FXX, but I was watching a hockey game on it last night. The overtime between the Predators and the Hurricanes was on FXX, and I have no idea what channel that was.
I agree with you. I was tuning into FXX thinking I would see something else of, more of the adult variety, but obviously there's hockey on there now. So
there you go. Thankfully, nobody got to witness you tuning into that. Thanks, everybody, for joining us this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I want to give a big shout out to our sponsors, Lynn's Heating, Cooling, Sewer, and Drain, our friends at Seagram's, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Boston Pizza. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thanks to Ken Weeb, Derek Van Deist and Seth Rorabaugh for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of it, it is available to watch immediately after on our YouTube channel. Of course, you can always subscribe and get the podcast version. That'll be on your device sometime in the next couple of hours. We'll get that posted in case you missed anything. Thanks so much to everybody for joining us. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.